So the other thing that I had uncovered in my research there at the archives as well is that there was a parallel United Women's Conference actually happening in San Francisco at the same time, in which all of the women delegates who were at UNCIO were also sort of shuffling to the Women's Conference as well. And so when you go through even the documents from the Women's Conference, it was just a one-day meeting. It was striking the different, if you compare the speeches, for example, of the delegates in the UNCIO setting and their speeches at the Women's Conference, it's completely different. It's a completely different energy. It's a completely different focus in the sense that in the United Women's Conference, they spoke much more openly about the sort of hostility that they were feeling as women at the conference. One of my favorite quotes is by Bertha Lutz, who's the delegate from Brazil, who's one of the four women who signed the UN Charter, and she said, the men sure like to hear themselves talk a lot. And she was speaking a lot about how she had been shut down in a number of instances during the proceedings because she kept raising the issue of Latin American women in particular, but feminism more generally. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the work that she was doing. But I think one of the concepts that I use in my work to make sense of what happened in 1945 is the process that Cynthia Enloe describes as reading power backwards and forwards. And I love this concept because it suggests to us that we have to look beyond the surface, right, of political institutions. We really have to understand the root causes of varied inequalities. We really have to read sort of power up and down, top down, from the bottom up. And in doing so, then we can trace inequalities to colonial, nationalist, patriarchal legacies. And so I appreciate her concept very much in thinking about power as nonlinear, as non-hierarchical, and as much more kind of fluid and complicated. So I think to use her framework to understand the power dynamics of UNCIO in 1945, we can really appreciate the way new constituencies were trying to enter this international body. And we see those new constituencies entering now, like I said, in terms of even women who work on issues of reproductive justice approaching the CERD committee on, in fact, viewing issues of reproductive justice as a racial justice matter. If you look also at the documents from the archives, another one of my favorite quotes is when one of the negotiators referred to their debates as Madison Square Garden. They had become so contentious and so divided in so many instances it would be misrepresentative to not take into account all of those hostilities and tensions that were existing between, in some cases, Latin America and the U.S., as well as with France. Let's see here in my remaining minutes. Okay. So one of the things, let me look here. Well, let me talk a little bit about some of the Latin American proposals. One of the more exciting ones that I had come across during my research last summer was a proposal advanced by Bertha Lutz and Minerva Bernardino, who was from the Dominican Republic, also one of the four women who signed the UN Charter. They had were proposing a commission, what we know now is the Commission on the Status of Women, but they had actually put forth a proposal during the proceedings to have a commission on the status of women that was only staffed by women. So this is what I mean in terms of they were really sort of pushing the envelope in a lot of ways. And so the U.S. and the British were very much so hostile to this. And what was interesting that had come out is that it was Latin American governments who were actually like, that's not a bad idea, actually. And you ended up having about a little bit less than 40 government delegates who thought maybe this is a good idea. We should have a commission on the status of women to study the issue of women and only staffed by women. But then the U.S. and British sort of pushed that back. But one of the things that came out of it was also, you know, when I say the U.S. pushed back, I also mean, you know, the one woman delegate on the U.S. delegation also pushed back. Virginia Gildersleeve, but some of you may know some of her kind of rich history, former dean of Barnard College. And she was very much so resistant to the proposals being put forth by the Latin American feminists, mostly because she was also wanted, mostly because she didn't understand the need to have a commission focused on women, because she felt that sort of signaling out women in this kind of way wasn't necessarily a useful exercise, and she called, you know, Bertha Lutz a spectacular feminist because she just found her really quite outrageous. And so she had, you know, her and Lutz, there's a lot of documentation of back and forth between them, and there was a very sort of tense relationship between them, where Lutz really pushed her on her lack of adopting sort of more explicit feminist positions during the conference. And so I have, you know, some quotes in there from Gildersleeve's memoir in my paper that that some of you might want to take a look at in terms of the way she thought about the kind of the feminism emerging from Latin America, or the sort of the feminist proposals emerging from Latin America. And then I think I'm kind of running out of time. That's sort of making me nervous now looking at that. let's see.
We'll turn it on the rest of the table later.
I know, right. So, okay, let me just say a little bit more about the United Women's Conference, because I think it was a fascinating conference to learn about in my research last summer. And one of the things that I will say about that particular conference is it tended to reify also power dynamics amongst women as well. And what I mean by that, different divisions amongst women as well. And what I mean by that is the way that there were still elements of paternalism invoked at the United Women's Conference. Mostly, you know, there were no, as far as the documents seem to detail, there were no women of color who spoke at the conference in terms of U.S. African-Americans or other U.S. women of color who spoke at the conference. And oftentimes, we see kind of the emerging discourse about U.S. women being more quote-unquote free than women from other parts of the world. And so those sorts of remarks are very striking, of course, because we're talking 1945 U.S. of A. And so it's you know, now when we look back, we have to obviously realize that level of sort of freedom that a lot of the women who spoke at the conference were experiencing was very much so related to, you know, racial class privileges and whatnot that sort of elevated them into a particular social status as well.